we have a very special Salieri Report for you today. We're joined by filmmaker Michael Cimon, who I've had the pleasure of filming with. He's the head of Videos for Change production and has a very talented resume, but very exciting. He's hooked up with our favorite head of student loan justice, Alan Collange, and he is making a video. You've seen the trailer on Salieri Report, and you've heard me talk about it, Scared to Debt, America's Student Loan Crisis. Is that correct?
Student loan scam. It definitely is a crisis, but it's worse.
It's true. You know, it is a scam. Scam is a much more, from a financial standpoint and legal standpoint, scam is a much more accurate term. We don't have a crisis. We have a scam.
And that was the title of Alan's book. And also something, if we jump right into this, Catherine, Matt Taibbi used the word swindle. And others called it a scam. And I was hesitant at first. But now that I know more about this whole situation, it truly is. And that's the thing that excites me about what this documentary might do.
Yeah, it was very interesting because when I met you, you came all the way to Tennessee, and I so appreciate that. But when I met you, you seemed like a very solid, grounded guy.
Well, thank you.
You're not excitable. You want to see the evidence. You have lots of experience. You know, you want to know all sides. And it was as though you kept going through, "You're kidding." You know, "What? You're kidding." It was sort of the education of Michael.
It's jaw-dropping, and that's going to be the education of millions of people when we get this
from this documentary.
Yeah,
it's very exciting. So let's start and tell us how you met Alan and how you hooked up with Alan.
I was introduced to Alan by a woman named Cynthia Pooler, and Cynthia came to me and said, "I want you to do this documentary. I need somebody to do this documentary. You have to tell this story." And I finally said, okay. And I read his book, The Student Loan Scam.
I think it's the best. It is the best book I've found. We reviewed it before we got to know him, and we just thought it was the best.
Yeah. And the question I asked Alan was, how did you know that there was a problem? And he goes into his, you know, how he first worked at a business where he was helping connect people, small businesses, minority businesses, to federal Department of Transportation projects, and that he understood, he got to know the way fair lending works. And then when he was thrown in default, he discovered, how this wasn't happening. And that fascinated me.
Right. The rules didn't apply.
No.
You know, if you look at where he got into school and his background, he's clearly very brilliant. And, you have to be pretty brilliant to get into the engineering program he got into. I mean, let's face it, 20 years, if it was 20 years ago, he'd be a rocket scientist today.
That's true. Yeah, he's got three degrees in aerospace science. And here he is, taking on the pitfalls of really unfair predatory lending.
Right. So what I want to hear about today first is I want to hear about the education of Michael. So you went from, this not being an area you had a lot of knowledge in to somebody who was ready to say it was a scam when you're a very serious documentary maker and somebody who, you're not somebody who throws words around like that.
Right. One of the things that I realized, and I took the experience of a documentary subject that is really quite serious. I'm friends and have interviewed David Kaczynski, who had to make the decision to turn in his brother, Ted. And in doing that story, one of the things I learned was that the major event had already happened. David had already turned in his brother when I met him 5 years later. His story, David's story, I think is fascinating. But I applied that principle that somewhere in here, the major event had already happened to set the thing in motion. What Alan is living and others, millions of other people are living, is a symptom of something that had already happened. And so I felt that, you know, I needed to go back and learn where how did this train get on the tracks like this, which is, you know, the metaphor is it's heading towards a cliff and there are no brakes.
Oh, I will say this. I just have to interrupt you. We're over the cliff. We're over the cliff because what you're watching is our future being demolished one child and one young person at a time.
Sure. Sure. And this, and so, the things that are coming out today, like the 50 people who bought their way into Yale or USC or wherever, that's just a pimple on this whole thing. That's not even close to the damage that's being done by all of this. But that's what the media pays attention to.
Well, I think the college, you know, to as somebody who spent time in Washington, I think part of the goal of that prosecution and the media around it was to make it look like the system is trying to do something without bringing real relief to the, you know, so that was smoke and mirrors designed to protect the system and the establishment from what's going to come out during the election about student loans.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you see that as of today with, you know, Elizabeth Warren may be coming close to offering a remedy, but it's still not getting at the what we know is the problem. And I learned that in interviewing you.
Walk us through the sequence by which you learned how bad this is.
Wow. Well, at first I read Alan's book, which is published by Beacon Press. And I said, Alan, we got to go to Boston. And I want to interview the people at Beacon Press and find out why did they ask you to write this book? And they saw this as incredibly significant. I mean, these are the people who have published all kinds of really important books on American history. And Alan's book, I asked them, how many copies have you sold? And they said about 5,000. So it's not a, you know, it's not flying off the charts or anything. But I think it could, you know, and I think it's something that everybody should be parents. This should be like the book that you read before your kid fills out a college student loan application and parents co-sign on it. On the way home, from Boston, I interviewed Jill Stein, who was a presidential candidate in the Green Party, who made it part of one of her 12 things that's part of her platform was student loans. And then after that, we stopped off in Connecticut in Ralph Nader's museum, American Museum of Tort Law. So now I'm learning about consumer protections. And Alan and Ralph Nader had written a letter to Barney Frank, the Department of Education, about 10 years prior, forewarning that this is what's going to happen. And at that time, I think student loans were around $200 billion. And by the time I was interviewing him, it was over $1 trillion, and now it's 1.6 and climbing. Probably approaching $2 trillion by the end of this year. So, and in the middle of that, I'm filming Alan write a letter to the Boston Globe and getting that published on the heels of that trip. And I'm filming as he's typing, and I'm really just learning as I'm watching him craft this argument and just trying to get the general public to pay attention to it. But he kept on mentioning that there was only like three reporters in all of the United States that have covered this. And one of them is Matt Taibbi. Right. And Alan, you know, he moves on things. And so he introduced me to Matt Taibbi, and Matt Taibbi happened to be speaking in Troy, New York, which is near Albany. And so I met him personally, but it was months later that I would go to interview him in his Rolling Stone offices. And it was there in New York where we had, you know, we had to get this done in under an hour, which was far shorter than the time that, thank goodness, in interviewing yourself, Catherine. But Matt started to talk about what could happen with the financial market. And what he had learned from the mortgage lending crisis is that all of these loans, the good ones, the bad ones, the really bad ones, they're all like meatballs. And they're all put into, they're like soy. They're in everything. But right. When you start to package these things, some of these things that are out in the market now, and Alan would say these are worthless because right. Students aren't able to pay on them. So all these bad loans are in with the good ones, and that's a concern. That's a crisis waiting to happen. And it was about the removal of consumer protections that you know that you realize that there's no brakes on this system. There's no way to fix it. There was another gentleman in Boston. I skipped over him. His name is Bob Hildreth, and because we filmed him late at night, and of Inversent, I think is the name of his company, but Bob was with the World Monetary Fund, and he is someone who helps countries deal with large amounts of debt like this, like Puerto Rico.
Right.
And he's predicting, he's the one who told me that this is Thelma and Louise, and this is, we're in this car, and there's no brakes, there's no consumer protections, there is no brakes, and I think, as you said, we are well over the cliff, we're falling. Right.
And here's why, because if you look at the number one investment that our society makes is in raising and educating their kids. One of the reasons the rural areas are dying is they raise and invest in kids, and then the kids go off to the city. You know, so they don't get that return on Main Street. But what we're talking about is sending kids into a system where, we haven't brought this up yet, the education they're getting is not appropriate to generate the skills they need to succeed in the way the world's going. So they're spending, you know, gobs more than they should to get the knowledge they need. But then they're borrowing into a system that doesn't have the classical protections. And as a result, they're being, you know, whether it's the, you know, the misallocation of curriculum and education and the overpricing of that or the debt, they are being engineered to fail. And when your kids fail, your future fails. They are your future.
Yeah.
And so we are engineering the failure. I'm a lot more worried about the failure of those people than the failure of the loans, because you know, what this society needs is we need those young people to come up and be successful. And that's the greater, you know, you don't see, it's easy to see a default and statistics on default. It's hard to see the waste of the intellectual capital of an entire generation.
Yes.
And that's the, you know, that's why I said we're way over the cliff, because, you know, we're losing these folks. You know, they stay, you know, they're walking around and, you know, because of the debt, they're in walking death mode. They're not in creativity, entrepreneurship, innovation, reinvent the future mode. And I just think it's, I'll get off my high horse, keep going.
Well, I'll throw in another name. I was introduced to Tom Borgers, who's a fraud expert. He was appointed by Obama to investigate the lending crisis. And Tom is just passionate about this. He has lent us his time and expertise. And he said, I really want to get to the bottom of these Parent Plus loans. And this is where parents co-sign on this. And this is the big fish for the lenders, because students don't have any money, but let me get to their parents.
Right.
They're co-signers on a, they have a, you know, co-signers, and they have a mortgage. They got a house, they got a pension, they got a retirement. Let me go after them. And so I started to meet with them, and I started to just talk anecdotally amongst friends and let them know, hey, I'm working on another documentary. And they're like, oh, tell me about it. My daughter's got $225,000. and my son-in-law's got this. And then another friend says, I just co-signed. I regrettably co-signed up my nephew. He was an A-plus student and couldn't find work. But now they're coming. Now I've got the collection agencies calling me. And once you get into that, and they can throw people into default. Then I met Anthony Fiorentino out of Chicago, who's an attorney who was thrown into, you know, he was studying to be an attorney and at law school, and they threw him into default. And boy, they picked the wrong person, because now he's mounting lawsuits in 50 different states, class action lawsuits of these practices.
Well, as you know, I am sure that they have broken the law. The industry as a system has broken the law.
Okay.
And I'm convinced, I can't believe ultimately, if we could field sufficient efforts, that that couldn't be documented and proved and this turned around. But what's most interesting is Congress. So what we're discussing is the fact that the normal consumer protections on any loan in this country and the fair lending laws don't apply to student loans. They've created a construct, and you do a great job in the trailer. We'll have the trailer up with this interview. I forget who it was who did the interview where he said, you know, they purposely set this up so they could make more money from people defaulting than they could make from people paying off their loans.
That's Tony Fiorentino. Yep, that's a lawyer. A lawyer who's right. been in stuck with student loans for quite some time.
Right, so he knows.
Yes. Yes. Another really fascinating person and someone I wanted to get to, and we couldn't until he was done with some of the lawsuits he had filed on behalf of the federal government, is John Oberg. And John worked for the Department of Education for 10, 11 years. And he witnessed and discovered the overbilling by the lenders to the tune of $800 million.
Wow. So he filed a QTAM?
He needed to leave the Department of Education for 2 years. But right. I believe he's there during Clinton, and then he's there during the Bush II, if I have that right. And he's well aware that the consumer protections were removed under both. And he's there witnessing the head of the Department of Education give the lenders a free pass. And so when it was proven that they had overbilled, he at first was feeding information to the New York Times anonymously. And it wasn't until 2007 that he becomes the front page story whistleblower. And then he starts to mount lawsuits. And so from 2007 to this year, 2019, he was successful, I want to say 7 out of 9 times or 8 out of 10 times, which I'm told
that's fantastic.
From a whistleblower standpoint, it's off the charts. So he was able to get, in fact, the last lawsuit, Betsy DeVos probably spent $12 million fighting against him. Just millions of dollars are at stake. And it's just amazing that this, so what the term that fascinated me that John Oberg uses is called the Iron Triangle. So what I said, what's an Iron Triangle? And I looked it up. I said, well, how does it apply here? He says, well, that's where what he was witnessing, and I think documents well, is how in the privatization of Sallie Mae, which is occurring during your time there, you witness that. But then they go on to influence Congress. Then the industry backfills positions, which is what we're seeing today, with people within the Department of Education, which is giving the industry a free pass, which is you've got Congress that isn't doing anything, and even though they've had these bills like H.R. 2366 and now H.R. 770 that could restore consumer protections, and they're not taking any action on it. There's no will, strong will, aside from a handful of Democrats.
So I find this shocking that Congress won't move on this.
Yes.
This is really shocking. Now, it's a little bit like the Madoff situation where, you know, the courts and Congress protected all the financial institutions on Madoff.
Yes.
So, you know, so they keep protecting, you know, whether it's the missing money or the bailouts or Madoff or student loans, they keep protecting this financial vacuum cleaner, which is basically running around and breaking the law again and again and again and engaging in very significant securities fraud. I should just mention the privatization didn't start when I was there. It was clear that the management was eager to do it.
Right.
You know, so we heard them talk about it, but, you know, it was after I left and you had a new bunch of people on the board where they engineered all these really, you know, trying to tear up the lending laws and allow themselves to create a legal structure where you could make more money from somebody failing than from them succeeding, number one. But I think number two, you know, as you know, I think basically all student loans from that time on constitute fraudulent inducement. Because if you look at what the members, or at least one member of the board, knew about where the changes in the job market and were going with globalization, they knew these kids couldn't afford this debt. And they intentionally, fraudulently induced them into it without proper disclosure. If you know something material that you know and they don't know, then both the lenders and Sallie Mae, you know, if they don't disclose that to me, that's fraudulent inducement, and I can't believe the courts wouldn't uphold that if the case was sufficiently and properly made enough times.
Well, it's something that Tom Borders wants to do, is, and others want to do, is bring this case forward, these cases forward. So if you haven't, I'll have to get you in touch with him and see how we can map that out. It's amazing that no one has done anything.
Well, it's interesting. If you look at the trailer is quite, you know, everybody has to watch the trailer. You have the chairman of the Fed saying he's baffled by the idea that the normal, you know, lender, the normal borrower protections are not here. He sees no reason why they shouldn't be here.
That's right.
You know, so you got the chairman of the Fed saying that.
Yeah.
And then you got a former board member, Sallie Mae, you know, saying that this was, you know, they had engineered people to fail and it's fraudulent inducement. That's pretty bad.
That's where we start.
I know. That's where I thought, you know, why don't you tell them up front what you're going to tell them? There you go.
And we're going to prove it. Right. Like I said, it starts with, can you prove that this is a scam? Because those are powerful words.
It is a scam.
And boy. And that's what America needs.
And here's the question. The question is, you know, scams like this don't happen and go on for a long, long time unless somebody, you know, some committee of people very high up decide, you know, we're going to bring China up and bring America down. It's that kind of strategic vision.
Uh-huh.
And so the question is, you know, what was the goal here? You know, we haven't mentioned, if you look at a chart of tuition versus, you know, the CPI or consumer products or all sorts of different parts of the economy, you know, the price of a college education has skyrocketed. I'll just be honest, you're going to laugh. This is a little thing.
Yeah.
So my grandfather was the dean of Wharton. My father was the chairman of the Department of Surgery at Penn. My mom went to Penn graduate school. I graduated from Penn undergraduate. I graduated from Wharton MBA. You know, I've given a ton of money to Penn. Every year I get a Christmas card from the president's office.
Uh-huh.
It is the most extravagant, you know, supercilious Christmas card. And I think, you know, kids are going into hock for their lives to borrow money to pay the tuition. We can't afford Christmas cards like this. Have you people lost your mind? But, you know, it's just a tiny little metaphor for something that's very, very wrong, because you're talking about, you know, salaries for the administrators or, you know, all sorts of stuff going on, which is just the economics of universities have literally gone insane.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I'm seeing now is that, so this was all set up, but one of the things I'm learning is that, well, who's at fault? You know, everyone wants to blame the student first, but they're really the victims in this. And one of the three other players is the universities. They've allowed this to happen.
Right.
The lenders and government.
Right. Everybody, all the adults are on the treadmill making money from indebtedness of the children.
Sure.
Well, what, tell us about some of the other interviews you did that were so compelling.
Well, we read an article about a conservative. Frank H. Buckley writes for the New York Post about education, and he writes an opinion piece that says the missing silver bullet to solve the education problem is the return of bankruptcy protections. And Alan and I said, we have to get to this guy, and we have
here,
to
here.
And it turns out that he's a speechwriter for the Trump presidential campaign. And part of the criticism that we were getting in early trailers were, well, this is just sort of a liberal bent on things. And so it was very important to get both someone like yourself to testify in a way, just tell us that early story, but also for someone like Frank Buckley to come in and say, no, this is the right thing to do. He is a distinguished professor at the Scalia Law School, part of James Mason University. And, you know, these are the things that make America great, as is our constitutional foundations of having bankruptcy so that the entrepreneurial spirit can survive and exist.
Right. Right.
So it was, Alan thought, next to your interview, he just loved hearing Frank offer, you know, that. It was just, we were high-fiving in the car on the way home. It was a great moment.
So let me ask you a question. In any of these interviews, if you ask someone, you know, if we can have $21 trillion go missing from the federal government, or we can bail out the banks to the tune of $24 trillion, in the scheme of things, this is only a trillion.
Yeah.
Why can't we bail out our own kids?
Right. And that's what Bob Hildreth does for countries. And he thinks that's what one of the solutions is, that the whole market needs to take a haircut on this. And
right.
we need to, that's the solution. That's one of the pieces to the solution.
Right.
And that's sort of what Elizabeth Warren is proposing to a degree for people who make under $100,000. $50,000. But from what I hear, some of these people, students, borrowers who had, you know, started off with $8,000 have, you know, or something like Alan's case, he had, I think, $32,000. It's well up over $200,000 now, his loan. So even $50,000 doesn't solve his problem.
Right.
So that's right. That's just not, I don't know. It's not the total solution to liberate and get Alan back to being an aerospace scientist that he was trained to be.
Right, exactly. Okay, so keep going. More interviews?
Oh, let's see. Those are the big ones.
Well, you came all the way to Hickory Valley.
Oh, of course, of course. I want to say this to your audience. I drove 18 hours. for 2 days, and getting to Hickory Valley was just so important, because as I said in when I started, was the major events had already occurred to get this train off and derailed, and somebody knows how it happened. And that led me to your living room and interviewing you in Hickory Valley.
Now, before you came, you read my article, William Diefendorfer and the Economic Hitman of Student Loans.
Yes.
You had read it. Okay, so you basically knew the story, though.
Yes, and I'm still trying in my mind to, you know, bring the two, the issue with housing and the amount of money that's being made in that whole sector and prisons. And then, well, I guess the thought that I got out of that was...
Well, you're thinking of the Dylan Reed book. I'm talking about the one... It was my board member, William Diefendurfer, who went on the board of Sally Mae.
Yes,
and
okay.
So it was funny. There was a reporter who covered student loans for Bloomberg. He was one of the guys who was really onto it early. And he kept calling me and trying to interest me in looking at it. You know, when I was embroiled in trying to stop the housing bubble and dealing with the litigation, and I just, you know, I didn't focus on it. And it wasn't until I read Alan's book that I realized,
wow,
oh my God, you know, if you look at who could have engineered these legislative changes, that was Bill Diefendurfer's claim to fame. I mean, that's what he was great at.
Wow.
And, you know, he went on the board and created a whole career for himself between Sally Mae and now, I guess, Navient and, you know, the student loan industry. And he's made a ton of money. And I looked at it and I couldn't believe that Bill Diefendurfer would do that. I couldn't believe that someone who had been so blessed by the system that they would turn around and do this to an entire generation of young people. And so I wrote the article just to describe, you know, what had happened and my own experience with Sally Mae. And because if you look at a lot of the board members who I've served on Sally Mae, they would no more have done that than the man in the moon. Now, you had a management team, you know, the number one and number two guys who were clearly gunning for privatization. And they were so angry and negative about the, you know, the public-private purpose of a Sally Mae.
And you're talking about Albert Lord and, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Al Lord was the chief financial officer. He was the one who, I assume, led the, and then the other guy who was the CEO, Larry. I can't remember, so I'd have to go back and look at the article. But, you know, they were so negative. And I remember, you know, I described some of the interactions between me and the board. Normally, if I was on a board of directors, I would never, you know, I would never talk. I would never tell those inside baseball stories. But if you look at the extent of the scam, I think we have to. I think we have to talk honestly and openly about these things because you're talking about something that to me is really, you know, in violation of the laws of the country and the laws of God, both. And so we have to talk about it. So, you know, I've made an exception in this case and I'm glad I did. Anyway, you know, it was inconceivable to me that would happen. It would have happened under the board that I served with. They would just, you know, and they kept trying to talk the management out of their negativity. They couldn't understand what their problem was.
And you were very courageous to come on camera and share what you're talking about in quite detail. And learning what you went through when you were anticipating the mortgage bubble, your life was at risk.
Yeah, no, my life was definitely threatened and at risk. But, you know, here's the thing. One of the things I learned in that process, Mike, is there's, you know, I'll speak as a Christian. There's demonic and there's the divine. And the middle of the road is going away. So we all have to choose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we want a moral existence or do we want a psychopathic existence? Because those are the choices. If you look at what was done here, it's psychopathic.
Yeah.
It's certifiably psychopathic. I want nothing to do with it, and I want to get to the bottom of it and change it. You know, we need fair lending. We need the predatory lending laws. We need bankruptcy provisions all returned. And then we need a way to turn around and, you know, undestroy to the extent possible the generation that's now, you know, over the cliff and being destroyed. So this needs to be turned around if we want to have a human society, if we want to have a civil society. To me, this is at the heart of it. If you don't do this, it's hopeless. So, you know, if I were to say, oh, no, I'm not going to talk on camera about this, that's the equivalent of me saying it's hopeless. There is no future.
Right.
And, you know, why would anybody take that position?
Well, I'm so glad that you offered us your story and your time. To me, I went away saying that was well worth the travel. It was.
Well, you know, you and Alan both look like everybody looks by the time they get to Hickory Valley. You know, by the time you're at least 10 minutes away, you start to think, can we possibly get out? You know, everybody expects to see the guys in Deliverance with a banjo to come out of the side of the road.
I can't believe how lovely and quaint.
It's very lovely. Yeah. It's very lovely. We our Christmas parade banner in 2000 was going to be Hickory Valley, so far behind, we're ahead. Anyway. No, it's, you know, I'm telling you. So tell us about the you've got the trailer out, you've got the website up. What's the URL for the trailer and website again?
Folks can find it on our website at scaredtodebtmovie.com. And if they want to help see this finished, they could hit on the donate button. And I don't know what you did, but somebody already sent us a check after
great. That's great.
And Solari, and I was like, you know, every bit is helpful, and it keeps your spirits going when we're taking on such a massive problem.
Well, here's the thing: if you look at the footage you've gotten great footage. So this is a real problem. You know, you got the top guy lobbying for change in Alan. Yeah. You've got an established, successful documentary maker. You've got, if you just look at the footage you've got already, it's dazzling. I mean, it's when I first watched the first minute of the trailer, I was like, holy cow.
That's great. Oh, you know, and there's a couple of people I missed out. Of course, the borrowers, there's a Georgetown medical doctor there, Michael Pappas, and he's doing great things, and he's trying to, you know, imagine a medical student looking up and even taking the time to explore what kind of system they're in, because he's looking at this from a medical perspective and wondering why are doctors committing suicide over student loans?
Right. Right.
Crazy.
Exactly. So here's the thing. All we need enough gas in your tank so you can finish this.
Yes.
So you've got if you hit the donate button, you can go to the crowdfund. This is a documentary that's going to rock the world. It's going to be very successful, because if you just look at what you've got in the can, it's done.
Yes.
Now we just need the money to get it out there and distributed. So, you know, every week when we do a donation, we put it up on the website, we tweet it out, we encourage other people to do it. And this is one that's, this has an extraordinary high return on investment. This is something, you know, I would really ask you to consider for your gifting budget, for your donation budget, because this is just a great crowdfund. Anyway, so before we finish, anything you want to add?
You know, if folks can consider giving anything, they can give in multiple ways. Obviously, cash helps us finish this. I can put the editors that are standing by and put them to work. Other pieces behind the scene, professional team. People could also refer their friends, five people. Start to just talk to your friends, whether or not they have student loans, because a lot of people keep this quiet, and you might discover, they're quietly sitting on $100,000 to $150,000 in debt and don't know what to do. They don't know how to get there. And you brought up God and being a Christian a couple of times. People can say prayers. That helps. You know, we want to win this one, right? And so there's three ways in which people can help. So everybody who's listening can do something.
Right. But I think part of it is just getting people to stop feeling terrible.
Yes.
And get them talking about it. And we need to share this, because this is a scam. And we're not going to turn it around or help the people who need help unless we can connect the dots. And I think that's what the documentary can really help. It can get people out of shame and get them moving and moving towards real solutions. I mean, you know, I got to say, even the chairman of the Fed agrees. I can't believe you got that. That was great. Was that one of the people in Congress who asked that question? Was it?
Yeah.
Just give us a minute and tell us who in Congress can we support who's really doing something here?
Okay. So Senator Dick Durbin is behind, possibly getting behind bringing, or at least he's asking the right questions about, and you could contact his office and say, how can I help? Is there anything that you're looking to do with this? Because I think someone being in the Senate can join with the people who are in the House of Representatives to bring this forward.
Right. Is there anybody else who's shown real leadership? Anybody in the House?
Katko in New York is a Republican who is the co-signer on it. He co-signed the preceding bill. See if he can get more Republicans to join. He's up in Syracuse, New York. There are other, Alan has on student loan justice a wall of fame and a wall of shame now. So we can find out, we can find there, I think, a number of people who we can ask to help in both houses.
Okay, so give us one more time the movie website, and give us Alan's website, and give us your website, okay?
Sure. So the name of the movie is Scared to Debt, America's Student Loan Scam. And folks can find us at scaredtodebtmovie.com. And my website is videosforchange.com. And Alan's website is studentloanjustice.org.
Well, I'll tell you what Alan's been able to accomplish on a shoestring, and now what you've been able to accomplish just with what you have in a can is really remarkable. And if I were the bad guys, I'd be scared.
That's our goal.
Yeah. Well, it's time for them to fess up and be part of making the solutions. What we need is we need them to get ahead of this and start to make the real changes. So, okay, well, again, thank you for all your work. I really appreciate everything you've done. And ever since you showed up, Alan is definitely more chipper. There's no doubt about it. It's like the cavalry has arrived.
That's it. We're all part of the cavalry, and Solari is part of the cavalry. And there is, and according to Seth Frotman, there is no other cavalry coming, so that's where we're at.
We are the cavalry. Okay, Mike, have a great day. Thank you again for joining us on the Solari Report.
Catherine, thank you, and I look forward to coming back to Hickory Valley.
Bye.